Hey, we've got a great Ham Nation episode for you tonight. In honor of Memorial Day, we're going to talk with Cliff Cahart, W4KKP. He's the oldest amateur radio operator, I think, for sure in the U.S. He's 107 years old, and he's got a great story about Iwo Jima and what he did in World War II to keep the communication lines flowing. Valerie's got a great segment on an IOTA award, a couple of special guests there. And George is going to show us some new ideas for a hotspot. Of course, we've got Amanda and Gordon and Bob and the rest of the crew. And we'll have you, too, coming up right now here on Ham Nation. And Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. And by LastPass. Prepare for the unexpected in your business with LastPass. Trusted by over 17 million users and 61,000 businesses worldwide. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you.
This is Ham Nation, episode 455 for May 27th, 2020. 107-year-old Cliff Cahart, W4KKP.
Hello, everybody. It's Bob Heil, K9EID. And we're here on a very special weekend. We're a day late or two, Memorial Day weekend. And that's why all of the regalia have red, white, and blue. But the main thing is you're here. We have a wonderful show. Valerie has some more great guests and awards and things like that. And George is working on something he's going to show us when he gets his smoke and solder all going. And there's Gordo all dressed up from Southern Cal. Gordo, how are you?
I am fine. And yes, we hoped everybody had a good weekend and celebrated the unfortunate loss of so many veterans, so many soldiers that we memorialize. And the good news is it's red letter day for California. Ultimately, in the next few days, we can get haircuts. Next few days, we can actually go to the beach and sit down on the beach. Good things are happening, but in Amanda's territory, the Western Colorado Amateur Radio Club, this Saturday is holding the Headless Chicken Festival. Now, I've never whacked a chickie and watched his head roll out and watched him zoom around, but I can imagine that the Headless Chicken Festival, W0A, they'll be on the air, will be something that you'll definitely want to get a QSL card for. So tune him in this Saturday, and hooray, we're all here alive and well.
That's great. George, what do you have going? You got your smoke and solder all cooking? What are you doing?
Well, I do, Bob. I've got, I'm just going to show you what I've been working on for the last week, maybe week and a half. I've been working on some new projects. I won't say, I really don't have any video. I've got some still shots, though. And a couple of items to show you, and I've been pretty pleased with them. So I just wanted to give you a little taste of those tonight. And I did not get the memo about wearing red, white, or blue tonight, although it's sort of blue. And for red, I do have this right here. That's the only thing I had handy in the shack. But, yeah, I've got one of these.
You got a blue shirt, red. What else we need? A white and a TW.
Yeah, he's good.
Air conditioner good. Control.
Yeah, there you are. Valerie, you're all in red and shining. You have a really special thing tonight again.
I do. I didn't know about the red, white, and blue. I'm just so in sync with Bob and Gordo. It just happened naturally. Hey, I've been going crazy on 6 meters this week. I mean, Jays were coming in last week. Europe, Caribbean, South America, Central America is coming in now. So if you're not on 6 meters, you're missing out right now. But yeah, we've got a really good segment tonight. Another award will be given out. So stay tuned for that. Back to you.
Well, I'm going to bring you some very special things tonight. I have a piece of the interview that I did with the oldest living ham radio operator, Cliff Cahart. We met up a couple of years ago, and I've got some really great video, but I'm gonna play just a few minutes. He was the guy that made Iwo Jima happen by communications. You got to stick around for this. But before I start the video, I have to share this with you. That's my dad and I, 1945, I think that would have been. He was drafted into the Navy, became we called him a tool man. He worked in one of the cages giving out parts at Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, that was the depot for parts. And that's a proud picture I have of he and I. And I just thought I'd open the show with my dad. And before we go over to meet Mr. Cahart, and you really need to, whatever you're doing, put it down and pay attention, because this guy is a true American. So let's go take a look and listen to the oldest living ham. He's now 108.
I'm Bob Hyde, K9EID. This is an interview with Cliff Cahart, W4KKP. Cliff is the oldest living amateur radio operator, and he relates the story of his appointment to install the communication system on Iwo Jima. This is a fascinating story. Cliff, it's my honor to be with you.
My honor to be with you, too.
And what was your birthday? What was the last birthday? How many?
October 14th. I was 106, and I'll be 107 this coming October.
Wow. And you're still active on ham radio?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Look at all the cars. You'll have to show some of these in a little bit. Well, I'm so honored to be here. And one of the things I want to ask you, if you would like to talk about it at all, is you did a thing with a special antenna during the war, right?
Oh, yeah. That was rhombic antennas, very directional.
Yeah.
They are the triangular
right.
type. They had three of those. Mm-hmm. Three towers, and fortunately, the Seabees put up the towers. They were nice steel towers, and they did that. They also built me a nice Quonset hut.
All right.
To put all the transmitters and so on.
Yeah.
So it was nice, and I had a crew of 12 altogether mm-hmm. that went with me, mm-hmm. and most of the work that the crew did. They put in the poles. They were in civilian life. They worked for the power company or the telephone company, and they knew how to put the big poles in the ground. Mm-hmm. So they used those, and they stretched the twin lead-in mm-hmm. from my transmitters to the antennas.
And where was this, and what did you use it for?
Oh, this was the... What did the general call it? Wait a minute, I got it written down here someplace. Oh yeah, this was the administrative radio station.
Uh-huh.
That was what my job was, to put in the administrative radio station.
And they used this on Iwo, right?
That's right, and the three antennas, one was headed for the Pentagon directly. The other one of the others was San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and the third one was China.
Uh-huh.
We were fighting with the Chinese at that time.
Right.
And then the communists came in, and we got out of there along with the how do you pronounce it?
Saigon?
Chiang Kai-shek.
There you go. Yes.
And he created a new country.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the cement floor. And I ran the cables there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing I did. We had a big rainstorm, and we were sort of next to a bank, and the water came down and right into our transmitter place. But I was saved by the trenches. The water filled the trenches. Didn't hurt the transmitters.
Oh, that's great.
Anyway, after 6 months, I got everything working, transmitters all tuned up, the antennas on the towers. And these were rhombic antennas,
mm-hmm.
triangular. And they were already, they were designed properly.
Mm-hmm.
The narrowest was for the Pentagon, because that's the furthest we had to go. Mm-hmm. So we needed good directivity on that one. The others weren't too direct, but anyway, they all worked fine. And after 6 months, it was all done. And watching the B-29s come in and lining up, that was a beautiful day to see that happen.
Wow.
These great big planes and already they take off 700 miles and back was no effort for them anymore. And they go up every day and just bomb street after street of Tokyo, burn it up. So that was very worthwhile, I decided. And after a while, the civilians, the president back in the States, decided that we should drop the atom bomb to stop the war.
Mm-hmm.
So they did. After the 6 month, I was ready to go on a Marine plane back to Guam, and from there go back to my headquarters in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
But I was out at the runway, and we got an air raid warning. I said, that's very unusual. We hadn't had an air raid warning for 2 or 3 months, Japanese. And they didn't cause any damage. They were fast. Those Japanese planes were much faster than ours.
Mm-hmm.
And they really, really were fast. But they came over a few times, but they didn't do any damage. We had a good Air Force yet. They didn't have much left. So I finally looked up, and this plane didn't have any IFF on it, information friend or foe.
Mm-hmm.
So after a while, we saw that it was a B-29 up about 37,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was rather strange. They didn't stop at Iwo Jima. That's where their planes were supposed to come. But he kept right on going, and he was headed towards Tokyo. And I figured, that's strange. Well, anyway, I finally got on this small Marine plane. I think it was a P-47 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I flew on and landed in Taiwan. I guess that's where it was, Guam. It was Guam. And I heard a lot of noise. I went to bed, a lot of noise after I landed there. So I got up to see what everybody was shouting about. So I found out that we had dropped this bomb on nowhere near Tokyo, about 800 or 900 miles south of it, on Hiroshima. And so they just ruined that city and murdered thousands of people.
And that plane you saw was?
Well, the Enola Gay.
That was the one.
Yep, that was the one.
Very, very.
Everything happens sort of at once there.
Yeah. Well, this is an incredible story. You've lived such a life, and we're all honored that you're still here. Because it could have been a little disastrous.
Well, that's right.
You've been through it all.
I was very careful of my crew. I did everything I could to keep them safe, because they had this heavy work of putting in the poles and running the two transmission leads.
Wow.
It was a parallel transmission line, about 500 ohms thereabouts.
Well, thank you for sharing all of this. This is really wonderful.
Yeah, I told you the whole story.
That's great.
So what more can we do when you think about those things? I mean, the whole deal is that he's still active. He's on the air and active. I don't know that I'll ever be that active, but I just had to let you see some of that. It goes on for about 45 minutes. I'm going to get this posted, and we'll let you know where it's going to be. So, again, we think about those guys so much during this weekend. Gordo, how do we top W4KKP?
Wow. A big salute to him and all of the fellow soldiers that helped us win the war. Well, Bob, we're going to pick up where Valerie was talking about, and that is life on and the excitement today, as well as this past week on 6 meters. So if we can go ahead and go for six. The reason 6 meters is such a magic band is we're right now entering sporadic E season and just in time for the upcoming ARRL VHF UHF contest. That is scheduled for June 13 and 14, a couple weekends away. And the contest activity for voice on the 6 meter band will be right here at 50.125, upper sideband. The SkyWave contacts that may come in and hopefully will warm up the ionosphere where they will can be picked up either vertically or horizontally. So a lot of contesters a couple weekends from now, June 13 and 14, will be mobile, and the big antenna, the big horizontal loop you see, that's not an HF loop, that is a 6 meter loop with a pair of, looks like 2 meter, maybe 222 above and below it. And the big deal is on 6 meters, when you turn your rig on, start at the bottom of the band and just spin the dial in upper sideband up to 50.125, especially around and below 50.100. Because below 50.100, you're going to run into CW contacts as well as beacons. And the beacons you can actually see quite clearly here that they have a CW ID. Well, I can almost read it visually. But if you're hearing beacons other than your local, it means that the 6 meter band is open. So on voice, go to 50.125 and make a lot of noise by calling CQ. And as you can see up and down the band, you know you've got to go a little bit up to clear the calling frequency once you make contact. So you tell the other station during the contest weekend, June 13 and 14, a couple weekends away, let's go up 10, go up 15. That means up 10 kilohertz or up 15 kilohertz, and nestle yourself around all of the other DX that is pouring in. And once you get off the calling channel, then it's pounce, hunt, hunt, and pounce on all of the other stations that are finishing up with a QSO. This with so much activity, obviously, coming in via SkyWaves. Some of you will turn on your radio and you'll go, whoa, look at all the beacons. No, those are not beacons. It's either your washing machine or the blender that someone is cooking up in the kitchen. This is microprocessor noise, every 20 or 30 kilohertz, right on the nose. And the only way to get rid of that, don't even think about a noise blanker or noise eliminator or noise reduction or you name it. None of those are going to help until you find the source and pull the plug on the source. And then you're going to have a good shot of hearing activity on the 6 meter band. Now, many of you, like Gary, 6KVC is going to operate digital. You'll find them up the way, 50.313 or thereabouts. Or maybe you'll find him down on CW at the bottom of the band. And he's going to say, what is my report? Give him your call sign. Give them your name, and they want to know your grid square. And the grid square is 1 degree latitude by 2 degrees longitude. That works out to be about 70 miles by 100 miles. If you're in Southern Cal up to the Bay Area, you're in Charlie Mike. If you're north of that, you're in Charlie November. And same thing if we move over to the Midwest, Delta November, or down below that, Delta Mike. Over in the Great Lakes, your prefix will begin with Echo November or Echo Mike if you're down in the south where George is. And for those of you on the East Coast, the grid square will begin with Fox November and then the two-number grid square or Fox Mike. But do know your grid square before the contest begins. You don't have to be part of the contest other than to give these operators contact points. And they get 1 point on the 6 meter band, but they get additional points if you go higher up the dial. So get on 2 meters. You can do that with a Heil headset tied into an Icon transceiver. Be sure and have a cat right next to the operation. That is our cat that we are taking care of during the pandemic from the local cat store, although he's getting pretty used to all the radios. But here's Susie making contacts on the 2 meter band. And on the 2 meter band, you can go to 146.52, which is the national calling channel, make a quick call, and then say, I'm going up to 146.55, or I'm going up to 146.58, or an alternate simplex frequency, making sure that you're on a simplex frequency, not a repeater input. And FM is fine. In fact, when you're operating the contest a couple weeks away, you can do self-spotting. You can look at the internet for where people are, whisper, all sorts of great ways. This contest is wide open, trying to get as many folks on the VHF and UHF band. Hey, you could be the only one in the country, like Steve, with a wind system operating portable jacuzzi. And some operators will go, what do you mean jacuzzi? And, well, he'll explain it. But again, have fun. No repeaters, no repeater contacts allowed, and no crossband. So it's all got to be simplex. For those of you, Motorcycle Amateur Radio Club out here in Southern Cal and around, great installation of their 2 meter 440 transceiver that you see right there. And plenty of ground plane for the antennas. So on a motorcycle, you don't need a whole bunch of ground because you're already sitting on it. Now, for those of you that, as I enjoy, going out on the boat or maybe doing a little surfing, well, no, but anyway, going out on the boat, as long as you're more than about 12 miles offshore, you can identify as maritime mobile. And everybody, almost everybody, enjoys working a maritime mobile. I'm not sure I would go out on a day like today. If you don't see surfers in the water, well, this was, of course, a little while ago during the epidemic. But anyway, if you don't see surfers in the water, it's way too rough out there. Now, I encourage all of you on 2 meters and 6 meters and 222 and 440 that if you're operating either sideband or in the upper portion, the FM portion of the band, go to a tall hill. You can really see by this relatively expensive propagation program what your line of sight is going to be. And you can see that you've got pretty much 360, except for a little notch at about 11 o'clock, with good solid contacts going all the way down well into Baja California and out to Arizona and Nevada and halfway up the California coast. Yeah, I know a great hill. Yeah, there's a big radio tower. No, you don't want to do this either. If you get real close to a mountaintop radio tower and you're either operating mobile or maybe 2 meters with a handheld, and you wonder, how come stations are coming in real strong and then they go away, and then they come real strong and then they go away? That's because you're being desensed by these megawatt ERP signals coming out at 150 megs or all of the pagers at 152, several hundred watts. So don't get too close to a big radio tower, because that tower will desensitize your receiver on 2 meters for sure. Solar panels, they're great. And now they've really reduced the cost of solar panels a great deal. But a word of caution, make sure that you're regularly checking on your solar panels to make sure there's no shadows. A little tiny shadow on those solar panels where the elements are put together in series will interrupt that solar panel output, and it'll go from the one on the left, maybe 2 amps, one on the right, maybe about 1.8 amps. It'll drop it down to almost no amps, because the shadow in a solar panel series circuit interrupts that panel. So make sure your panel is absolutely clean with no shadows. For those of you with a multi-mode equipment, many times it does include not only 6 meters, but 2 meters and 432. Your 2 meter upper sideband calling frequency is 144.200. Make your contact and then switch off. Very important. I usually go up 10 to 20 kilohertz to make sure. Don't just park on 200 with your big 16-element beam antenna. That's the one on the bottom. And hog the channel. No, 144.200 is the calling channel. Just like 50.125, switch off and get about 10 or 20 kilohertz. Now, some of the digital modes, you're in pretty good shape to stay anywhere in the ballpark and let the computer do the work. But I enjoy voice contacts. By the way, that antenna on the top is 1296, and that gives you all sorts of multipliers the higher you go in frequency. And on 2 meters, single sideband is the mode. We usually use horizontal polarization, and on FM, we usually use vertical polarization. And all of the digital modes for the contest weekend coming up in a few more weeks are open, and Val will tell you a little bit more. But one thing we really agree on tonight is this past week, 6 meters has been absolutely a kick. So get a whole bunch of, if you're a rover, antennas on your vehicle, either vertical if you're going to be trying FM, or horizontal if you're going to be weak signal work. Or you tell me what works best on the digital modes, whether it's vertical or horizontal. But generally, those signals are going to be so strong, you're going to have no problem. The strong signals are fun, but look for the weak ones. Remember, 2 meter sideband many times will go 200 and 300 and 400 miles with tropospheric ducting, and those conditions may prevail. And occasionally on 2 meters, there'll be the rare moment of sporadic E skip going not only up to 2 meters, but up to 222. And there's even been a contact or two, not from my station, but friends on 432 via Skywave E skip. And that was a good record I had a few years ago, talking in November Zero Lima Lima, major station in the Midwest, via 2 meter skip. Many of you are mesh and Arden. Well, I hope they don't take away our 3.5 gig band. A mega, it'd be 3.5 gigahertz band. But try and see what kind of contacts you can get where you think, well, gosh, 40 miles is just not going to make it. You may find that it will make it during the contest, and there'll be other people looking around. Satellite contacts are considered crossband and will not be eligible to win. But by golly, that antenna on a handheld, bring it down to horizontal a little bit more, and then you can select the polarity. But working satellites, it's always a great way to see what's going on, but not allowed for the upcoming 2 meter, 440, 6 meter and higher contest. And even on a small handheld, Romeo Sierra Zero, India Sierra Sierra, ISS, International Space Station. Well, they didn't get the rocket and the two pioneers on the next version of the spacecraft up to them yet. They'll probably go up, we hope, Saturday with great success. But you can pick up packet, and packet is allowed from the International Space Station. In fact, we've sent up, and it's soon to be installed, a lot of slow scan television, and that is our salute to Owen Gary at W5LFL, with whom I made one of the first contacts on his first revolution, lighting up ham radio from his space shuttle. So lots of activities coming up in the next few weeks. But again, it is the big contest weekend coming up. That is June 13 and 14. But most important, don't park on the calling channel. And indeed, try weak signal, single sideband, and have fun knowing your grid square. We are Delta Mike, DM13. So get one of these grid square maps. You can get it through ICOM America. They've got them on their website, and the maps give you a real good look as to who is where. Well, that was the East Coast. There's a little West Coast representation, who is where via their grid square. So know your grid square. Speaking of ICOM America, let's see what ICOM's up to for making weak signals nice and strong.
Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion, as you have base station features and functionality at the tips of your fingers and a portable package covering HF 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at 1 kilo, or just over 2 pounds. With RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz, 5-watt battery operation with BP272, or 10 watts with a 13.8-volt DC supply. Modes include single sideband, CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions, a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, and live band scope with waterfall, integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger, micro SD card for data storage. It comes standard with the HM243 speaker microphone, and it supports QRP and QRP-P operations. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 optional backpack, with a special compartment for your IC705 and room for accessories for soda activations or just a day in the park. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information about this and all the great ICOM radios.
And ICOM invites you to enter weekly in the drawing for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats at ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. Go there and learn how that you could possibly win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For May, we've got a really nice rig here. It's the ICOM ID 5100A VHF UHF dual band D-Star transceiver. It's an innovative 2-meter, 70-centimeter mobile with touchscreen, built-in GPS, DVDV dual watch, DVFM repeater list function, DVFast data mode, SD card slot for voice and data storage, and there's an optional Bluetooth board available as well, and downloadable Android app. go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. And as a matter of fact, this is the last week to register to win that ID5100A mobile there. That's a great rig. I told you about it a couple of weeks ago. That's what I've got in my pickup truck. I really like it. I mean, whether you do D-Star or analog, it's just hands down the best dual band rig I've ever had any experience with. So thanks, ICOM, for the contest there. And you go register today, right after the show. What have I been doing? Well, you know, with most states in lockdown just starting to come out, and that's kind of where we are here in Mississippi. I've been working from home, though. You know, I didn't get furloughed. Well, my job, you know, I'm a broadcast engineer, and a lot of things these days I can do from home. Back, you know, 20 years ago, no, couldn't do anything from home, really. But now you can, and as a matter of fact, they woke me up early this morning, and I had to do some things, but fortunately, I was able to do them remotely. That saved us a lot of dead air time and saved me a trip into the studio and however long it would take me to figure out what was going on. So things are really better in the working world today. With the advent of the internet, it has really helped us out a lot on almost everything. With working from home, though, although I do occasionally, you know, I have to go out and do some things out in the field and go to the transmitter sites, occasionally go to the studios. But I've been here in the shack / office / studio quite a bit, you know, for weeks now. And I've been catching up on some projects. I've got many of them caught up on, not all of them. And this past, couple of weeks, I've been working on some things that I really wanted to do, and I've made some good progress with them. The first one here, and I'm going to blame this one on my cohort, Tommy Martin, N5ZNO. On the last episode of AmateurLogic.tv, he showed the N5BOC duplex hotspot. You know, this is a hotspot that does virtually every digital mode, D-Star, DMR, Fusion, NX, all of them. You know, it's, I don't know how many, I haven't counted them. I only have a couple of digital modes that I have radios for anyway. I was so impressed with what Tommy did there when he showed the hotspot. I rushed out because I got a sneak preview of the video. I ordered one before we even shot that show, and it came in this past week, and I got it put together. This is it right here. Now, I've got mine running off of a battery, just a, you know, cell phone charging battery. And let's just take a look at the display on it. The display is optional. You can add one of those or not. You just get that yourself. I got this one at Amazon, and you can't see the yellow there because my keyer is keying that out because I have a green screen in here. But it says the mode, it says D-Star, it's got the D-Star logo, and then it tells me, you know, what I'm listening to, who just transmitted, who I was connecting to, information like that. You know, you do all of that either from your rig, your D-Star rig, or just about whatever digital mode rig you're using. Or you can do it. I'm using Pi-Star, and that's what Tommy recommended. I've got to say that's probably the best, well, definitely the best thing I have used. And you can do it from a web browser, your cell phone. Any of those will work. And this hotspot, hands down, it's the the best one I've ever run across. It's not super expensive. The board itself costs $100. Let's take a little look here. This is it. It's $99. If you want to add the antennas, and you saw those two little short antennas on the end, it's like $3 or $4 more, so I just ordered it with the antennas. N5BOC is who develops this. He's out in Texas, and it really works great. Being duplex, that means you can be listening to someone on it, and yet you can key up your radio and get a command back to it. So, you know, it's transmitting and receiving at the same time. You'll need something to go with it. This is a Raspberry Pi Zero W. Now, you could use a regular Raspberry Pi with this as well. I just happen to have a Pi Zero W here I wasn't doing anything with. You can pick up these for only $10. You know, they're not very expensive. And it's a Raspberry Pi. You put an SD memory card in it. It doesn't have much memory, and it depends on how much storage you want, how big a card you put. You don't really need a big one. So we're on a hotspot, though. And you plug this board on top of it after you put in the header pins. The display, as I said, was optional. This is the one I got right here. This is a UCtronics 0.9-inch OLED module. Tommy had one that looked almost identical to this, but I got this one because it was right there on Amazon, and the price was right. It looked like one Tommy had, and I thought I would add it. You know, it was only like $6 or $7, so not much money, and you can just look at the hotspot and tell what's going on with it. Well, you see where I got those two little red arrows there? That's something you need to watch out for when you're shopping for one of these. The one that N5BOC developed the board to work with has the VCC pin on the left and then the ground right beside it. Well, they're reversed on this board. And fortunately, I saw that before I actually tried to plug it in. So I had to go in and cut a couple of traces on here and flip those around. It was no problem for me. You know, I don't mind doing stuff like that. As Tommy once said, I seem to modify almost everything I've got. And that's, yeah, pretty good point there. I do a lot of that. And, you know, doesn't bother me at all, but most people probably wouldn't want to do that. So if you get one of these, be careful that it's correct there on where the VCC and the ground should be. And that's it. You know, I've really enjoyed this thing. It just worked pretty much right out of the box once I put everything together. And pretty flawlessly, too. A lot better than the hotspot I was using before. If you're interested in that, I'm going to suggest you go to amateurlogic.tv, check out the latest episode. Tommy has a fantastic segment. He steps you through everything you need to know to put it together. It's only about 10 minutes long. Actually, I think it's 11 minutes long, but he did a great job of explaining it, and it's pretty simple to do. It's not a lot of work to put this together. And you might want to go ahead and order it. These things have been running out of stock. He's having trouble keeping up with them. So go to n5boc.com and check that out. If you're interested in a duplex hotspot, I don't think you could do much better than this one right here. All right, that's one project. That's doing radio with digital transceivers. So, and mostly going over the internet, you know, to connect to other repeaters or reflectors or other people using hotspots. Good technology. Well, you know, we've been doing that for years also with Echolink, and I've been working on a couple of Echolink projects. You know, I run a node here for the W5PPB repeater, and I have done that for a number of years. And he has three repeaters, two right here in the immediate area. And we wanted to link those two together. So I already had one sitting there on one repeater. So I built up a second one to put on the other repeater. We talked about that a few weeks ago, and I was using a Raspberry Pi and SVX link for the second repeater. And I had it working, but I never had the timing just like I wanted it. And there were a lot of extra chunks and, you know, dead air in between transmissions that was introducing. I got it reduced down on the Echolink machine I was using, which, you know, Echolink only runs on Windows. And there's not a version to run on Linux like the Raspberry Pi. So you have to use something like SVX Link. And it, you know, it's a fine piece of software. It works. A little more difficult, but it didn't have a lot of the options and timing features, or else I didn't figure out how to use them as easily as I could on the Windows version. So I decided I'm going to build up another Windows box, because eventually we're going to send this other one about 70 miles away from here and set it up at a friend's radio station. He's a ham as well, and he said, you can set this one up here and link in to the other repeater. That's just a little too far for me to reach here, but I've got a lot of friends in that area I want to talk to. So we're going to link up one about 70 miles away with a repeater, you know, right here that covers my area, and they'll just be, you know, like one repeater pretty much. So I decided to build a Windows box. The first one I had was a Wise dumb terminal. It was kind of old. It was running Windows embedded on it. I just couldn't find another one. You know, if I could, it would have been pretty cheap, but I couldn't come up with one. And so I started looking around at mini PCs, and I wanted something reliable, because this is not going to be where I can put my hands on it very often. And I'd heard about these right here. This is an Intel NUC. And I forgot what NUC stands for. It's N Units of Computing, I believe. It's just a little mini PC, runs an Intel processor. And, yeah, they're a little more money. They're not super expensive. This is one right here. This is the one that I got. Now, this one has a Celeron processor in it. It only has 2 gigabytes of RAM. It has a 32-gigabyte eMMC in it. That's to be used as a hard drive. You could also put a solid-state drive in it if you wanted, or a small laptop drive. And it came with Windows 10 Home. And, you know, that runs up the price a little bit, having a copy of Windows on it. But, you know, I thought, you know, if I do this, then I know I can build something that's going to work. And you would think a Celeron with only 2 gigs of RAM, it's not going to be very fast, but it's been much peppier than I would have expected. And it's got a couple of USB 3 ports on the front there, as well as a headphone jack. On the rear there, a couple more USB 3 jacks. And it's got a power supply jack. Takes 19 volts. It came with the power supply. There's an optical audio jack on it as well, which, of course, I won't use for this. An HDMI port for an HDMI monitor, or it's got a VGA monitor port on it as well. The thing can play 4K video, so it would make a nice home entertainment system, you know, something like a Roku or whatever, but you wanted to stream your own content from, or whatever you want to use. And it has an Ethernet jack on it, which is great because I plan to use wired Ethernet with it. It's also got Wi-Fi built in it. I believe it has Bluetooth as well. Now, this is a Celeron with 2 gigs of RAM. They make other models as well that have much more, you know, faster processors, more RAM in them. But this one was plenty enough for using for an Echolink node. Now, it didn't have a serial port, if you notice, so I had to get a serial port for it. So I got a USB 2 to serial adapter. You know, we use those today with our notebooks or whatever, because no computers come with a serial port anymore. And here's the thing you want to look out for, because these things often don't work or they develop problems after a while. Windows doesn't like them. If you're looking for one of these, regardless of what you're using it for, and you're probably using it with a radio and logging software or a digital modem or whatever, you want to find one that has an FTDI chipset in it. I've got it circled there in red. This one was only $12.23 at Amazon. You want to shy away from the ones that have the prolific chipset in it. They're very problematic. Might work and it might not. And then again, it might quit working and you can never make it work again. So just be aware. If you're looking for one of those, get the FTDI chipset. Also, I needed another sound card for it. This one did not have a line in for the audio. It had audio playback, and it has two built-in mics, which is handy if you want to use built-in mics. But, of course, that wouldn't work for what I was doing. So I just bought this little StarTech here. I don't know anything in particular about them. I just thought it was about $34. There's not as many options out there as there used to be. Now, you can get some really cheap ones. I didn't want a really cheap one. I had a really cheap one, and it was kind of flaking out on me with the Raspberry Pi. So I want something a little bit better. And here's the thing about this one. The main reason I picked it out, it has a line-in jack. You know, I don't want to run really the speaker-level audio out of a computer into or from a rig. You know, in this case, I wouldn't want to run that in a microphone jack. I mean, you can do it with padding and all. It's much better if you can go to a line-in jack. That's why I chose this audio interface right here. It's worked just fine. No problems with it. So I got it put together, got the timing done on it. Boy, this works just right. I mean, you'll hear an extra squelch tail in there, but it's fast. It doesn't really slow up QSOs on either repeater. You can hardly tell which repeater you might be connected to when you're doing this. They seem to work seamlessly, so very good luck with it. And that's what I've been working on for the last week and a half. All this stuff came in, and I got started putting it together and couldn't quit. And very satisfied with it. Now, I want to remind you, Friday night, we're doing the Next Time College. You can check that out if you'd like. We're studying for the extra exam. AmateurLogic.tv or live.amateurlogic.tv. That's where I'll be on Friday night at 8 Central Daylight, 0100 UTC, if you're looking for something to do Friday night. And that's my story. That's what I've got for you this week here in Smoke and Solder. And no smoke melted live here or via recording, but I did melt a lot of smoke. You know, there were a lot of pins to mount on this thing right here, and I did that as well as some various other soldering tasks. Seemed like I did a lot of soldering this past week. That's okay with me. You know, I kind of enjoy that. And now, let's see, who are we turning it to? Well, we're going to go to Valerie. I don't know what she's got, but she has something special lined up tonight. Hi, Val.
Hey, George. You know what I do have? I don't know if you can zoom in behind me there. Right on the edge of this white table, there's one of our two nooks, which is next unit of computing over here. Yeah. See that little bitty thing next to the amp? Wait, yeah. It's so tiny, that little. But that's one of them. And what's really nice about those nooks is they hardly take up any space. And when you have amps and radios and rotors and, you know, all this equipment on your table, it's really nice to have those nooks. So bravo on that. And I wanted to bring this up since Gordo did. I do have one of these ICOM maps. It's got the U.S. on the front and Alaska and Hawaii on the back. But this is a cute little hack that Jerry does that I love. He, I don't know if you can see, but he's got quarter round or shoe. It taped to shoe, And then what is really nice, because it'll just hang from a shelf or let me see if I can spin this around. It just hangs from a leftover monitor. See how I got it on my monitor there? It's great, because then if you hear a zone coming in, you know, or a grid square, I'm sorry, you kind of know where to turn your antenna. So, because you don't know where they all are, you know. So if you want to get them in on FT8 and you see it come, you know, see it printing, and you're like minus 24 and you want to bring it up a little. Anyway, so we've got a great show tonight. We have another thing to announce tonight. I'm joined now with Mike Crownover, Alpha Delta 5 Alpha. He is president of the Island Radio Expedition Foundation. Thank you, Mike, for joining us tonight. I understand you have some great news to announce. But before we get to that, why don't you just tell us a little bit about IREF?
Yeah, thank you, Valerie. IREF is to IOTA Expeditioning, what the Northern California DX Foundation is to DXCC Expeditioning, but on a much smaller scale. We make grants to qualified expeditioners. They have to meet a rareness benchmark, and if they put together a good team, they make application to us, and we make grants. We were founded in 1999. When myself and three others went on an expedition to Nicaragua to a brand new IOTA island, and we thought perhaps that might be of interest, we solicited sponsorship and netted only a dipole antenna. And we complained about that and finally decided to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem. So we put together a 501c3 organization, solicited contributions, put some of our own money in, and off we went, not really knowing what to expect. And here we are 21 years later, still making grants. Over our lifetime, we've probably given out $90,000 or so. You know, nothing compared to some of the bigger organizations, but something we're proud of. Then we, in the last couple of years, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, how many members do you have?
Well, roughly. We don't really track membership, but we've probably you know, a couple of hundred contributors over the years. There are some contributors who give annually since it's tax deductible.
So if you're an IOTA person, that's the thing to join to help get the funds out there so these guys can get on the islands, right?
Absolutely. And the thing you can rest assured, if you give to IREF, all the money goes to expeditioners. We really have no costs at all. And it's going to go to the rare ones. It has to meet fairly strict criteria to qualify. And so your money will go to ones you probably need.
And it's tax deductible, so you can't beat that. So I understand we have a big announcement tonight. So why don't I'm going to let you take the reins and kind of say what you need to say.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I want to thank all the sponsors for this award, which would be IOTA Limited, the Central Texas DX Club, and Daily DX for the first three plaques for this competition. Also like to thank Ham Nation for allowing us to come on. I think it's very cool what you guys are doing and letting these awards be announced. The Southwestern Ohio DX Association, who gratefully let us use their venue to do our first award last year, and hopefully we can maintain that relationship. And, of course, to you, Valerie, for organizing all this. Thank you. The IOTA Expeditioner of the Year Award is an individual award. It's not for an expedition, per se, but for an expeditioner who puts out the effort to put on, and he will take multiple operations in a year to be able to win this. You can go to our website, irefradio.com. And the rules are there. So this is a calculation based on rareness and based on a number of unique contacts. So we run this competition each year. And let me first announce the third and second place winners. The third place winner is Vlad, Radio Kilo 8 Alpha, and really his partner, Vasily, Radio 7 Alpha Lima, as a second place. They did many difficult expeditions in Asia this year, and really very, very qualified, very experienced expeditioners. But our winner this year is very prolific. He's done if you look at his, and I'll give his call sign in a second, if you look at his QRZ.com page, he's very prolific and has been to many islands, and this is what we're looking to award. So there we have VE7ACN, Mike, and I probably will butcher his last name, Zavarukin. He said that was acceptable, so there's my attempt, Mike. And I will, Mike has known about this for just a couple of days, and I'm very happy, Mike, to make this award to you. The plaque is a bit delayed because of COVID-19 and the shipping issues, but you'll get your plaque as soon as we can. And if you look at his QRZ.com page, you'll see he was the second place winner last year and see his plaque there. So, Mike, congratulations. And please, on the behalf of IREF, accept our IOTA Expeditioner of the Year Award.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mike. Thanks, Valerie. Thanks, Ham Nation, for the opportunity to be here. And I'm really excited, and it's frankly a little bit unexpected to get the first place, as normally we do travel, just two of us, me and my wife. And as she said a while ago, we are not going to any places uninhabited without any shelter. Like tents is not our way, so we need the shelter one way or the other. It's not necessarily to be a fancy shelter. Like in Alaska 2017 on Kayak Island, we had to throw wood into the stove for 12 days, virtually 24/7, to be warm. And last year, spring expedition to Eastern Canada, it was Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. It was the locations were very, very good. We were able to drive in to use just the ferry, and it's been really fun to be there. Overall, these three islands brought over 19,000 QSOs in the same year, 2019. We had two smaller activations. One is from or both of them from VE7. Virtually just a couple of hours from home, and it's added probably next 15 to 2,000 QSOs overall. So it's been over 20,000 Qs from the islands in 2019.
Very good. And do you have any new expeditions coming up in the near future?
As soon as we can travel, because nothing flies. But this year, 2020, we've been to Vieques Island, North America, 249. And I've been using call sign Kilo Papa 4 / Alpha, Alpha 7 Charlie Hotel. And it's over 8,000 QSOs has been made. And it's been great location. The next was Fox Sear with a plan to go to North America 199, but unfortunately the weather was not cooperating. And Easter Island, it's still island, but more DXCC. Unfortunately, it's been canceled. We flew into Chile in mid-March, and virtually a day before our flight to Easter Island, the airlines just shut the island and they said, well, no flights. So now sitting, waiting, making plans, looking for new islands to go. Canada seems to be getting opened a little bit after COVID, and it might be some Canadian islands in coming summer, but time will tell.
Very good. Well, hopefully we'll get to work you on an island soon. And a lot of other DXpeditions will head out soon, because I know we're all jonesing for some good DX. Did you want to add anything, Mike C? I'll keep you Mike Z, Mike C.
The only thing I would add is IOTA expeditioning is a bit like the old days of DXCC, where you have individuals and small teams going to destinations. And when you do an IOTA expedition, once you get to the destination country, if it were DXCC, you're there, you set up. If you're doing an IOTA expedition, then you must get on a boat from there to go to your island. So it adds a degree of adventure, I suppose, a degree of difficulty. We face the same issues with permission and preserves and those kinds of things. But it's usually smaller, either one man, two man, sometimes a little larger team than that. But it's back to the days of old. It's old-fashioned expeditioning, and those of us who do it love it. And we hope to keep it going and keep things up, keep some stations on the air for us to work.
Okay, I'm going to throw you guys off. How many islands have you guys been on? We'll start with Mike Z.
We've been to 25 islands, including St. Martin, which is obviously an island, but not interested as an island. It's more interesting as Iota. If we exclude that, it was 24 islands starting 2013, but serious expeditions. The first serious island expedition was in 2015, in August 2015.
And how about you, Mike Kronover?
Yeah, I've done a similar number, from Labrador to Nicaragua to Alaska to actually it's a VK9 island in Australia that's not a separate DXCC, Ashmore Reef. So, and then everything I can find in off the coast of Texas that's close. So I'm in the same ballpark, 20 plus expeditions in my career.
Very good. Well, thank you guys for going to these islands. So all those Iota chasers can get those new ones and put them in the log. And congratulations, Mike. It's an honor, I'm sure, to get this award, because there's a lot of you guys out there. So to be picked number one, wonderful. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And that's pretty much all I've got. I just want to remind everybody this weekend, WPX CW is this weekend. It's 48 hours Friday night to Sunday night. But if you don't want to do 48 hours, they do have a classic category, overlay category. It's only 24 hours. So you can get in something like that and just get in there and tinker. CW, WPX, a lot of fun because you can work anybody, not just DX. You can work US, anywhere. And it's prefixes. So also, I know I mentioned last week about the all YLCW class that the Long Island CW group is doing, and they had their first meeting Saturday night. I'm in the class too. And if you missed it and you wanted to do it, but last weekend was a holiday weekend, so you may feel like, well, it's too late to get in. It's not, because last weekend we just sort of kind of got to know each other, and everyone went around and introduced themselves. And we only got one, you know, everybody got one homework assignment, and was to learn the first four letters in the G4FON application. So not too late to get in this class if you want to get into an all-YLCW class. So go to the Long Island CW group. That's all I've got. So I'm going to head it over to Don with Amateur Radio Newsline.
Hey, thanks, Val. Good to see your smiling face, and good to be back on here tonight. I want to say hello to all of our listeners on WTWW 5085 shortwave tonight. If you haven't checked out WTWW, you really need to. They're a great friend to Amateur Radio Newsline and to Ham Nation. And right now, you can hear the audio from Ham Nation live simulcast on WTWW. It's a great, great shortwave radio station, so check that out. WTWW on 5085. WTWW.us. is the website. We don't have anything from Dr. T tonight. She was busy waiting, like the most of us were, to watch the SpaceX launch today, which was scrubbed. So no solar update from her, but we do have news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2221, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. The National Hurricane Center predicts a storm season that will be 140% more active than average and is encouraging hams to prepare now.
The NHC is having its annual station test on Saturday, May 30th from 1300 to 2100 UTC. This year is expected to be particularly challenging with the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, causing additional complications in logistics. Local emergency management agencies and the federal government have already issued guidelines for social distancing and face masks at hurricane shelters. Meanwhile, NHC station WX4NHC will be on the air during the annual station test. Julio Rapol, WD4R, the NHC's assistant amateur radio coordinator, said in a news release that any station in any location is encouraged to check in during the exercise for brief contact, exchanging weather conditions, and signal reports. The operation will be on HF, VHF, UHF, APRS, and Winlink, with WX4NHC focusing on the Hurricane Watch Net frequencies of 14.325 MHz and 7.268 MHz. The station will also operate on the VOIP Hurricane Net between 2000 and 2100 UTC. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Christian Kudnick, K0STH.
Storm season is rolling in as well in India, where amateurs already have a strategy in place.
As monsoon season approaches in the Indian state of Kerala, amateur radio operators have begun to prepare for emergencies that may follow. They're establishing stations near major dams, which officials have highlighted as a particular need since communication channels between the dams were broken when the state suffered devastating floods in 2018. That year, after the dams were breached, authorities were challenged in their attempts to reinstate the dam's operations. Subramanian Shastri, VU2NSL, director of the Institute of Amateur Radio in Kerala, told the New Indian Express website that operators were not only undergoing preparedness drills, but working to ensure that they follow COVID-19 precautions at the same time. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm John Williams, VK4JJW.
The COVID-19 pandemic continues to change the amateur radio social calendar. Here's Newsline anchor Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
Ham Holiday, the much-anticipated annual conference of the Central Oklahoma Radio Amateurs, is taking its event online. The in-person meetup at the Oklahoma City Community College is being replaced with a move online to Zoom, and the goings-on will be streamed through YouTube. This is happening on July 24th and 25th, the same days as originally scheduled. Organizers said that additional details will be made public as they become available. Attendees can expect some new forums as well as old favorites. For updates, visit the website hamholiday.com. Meanwhile, the HamCon Colorado convention has been postponed until 2021. No new date has been announced yet, but Chairman John Maxwell, W0VG, said on the convention's website that organizers are working on refunding registrants.
And a reminder, nominations for the 2020 Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award close Sunday, May 31st at midnight Eastern. You'll find the nominating form on our website, arnewsline.org, under the Awards tab. The award will be presented Saturday, August 22nd at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Alabama. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Christian Kudnick, K0STH, John Williams, VK4JJW, Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the News Desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And yes, at this moment, the Huntsville Ham Fest is still planned for that weekend in August. So hopefully we'll all be able to see you there for the Young Ham of the Year Award. I want to talk to you about LastPass. This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by LastPass. It's always important to have a plan for the unexpected, as we've seen with this whole COVID-19 thing. But of course, LastPass has nothing to do with that, but it can be deployed quickly in the midst of any event to ensure your business keeps running smoothly and every employee login is secure. So I guess, yeah, it does have something to do with COVID-19 because, well, we're all working at home and remembering all these passwords is kind of crazy. Single sign-on manages employee access in a centralized view, so IT always has insight into who has access to what and from where. Enterprise password management ensures oversight of shadow IT and enforceable policies across all password-protected accounts, and multi-factor authentication requires additional factors to prove a user's identity, while the use of biometric and contextual factors make the process smooth for employees. And businesses should be thinking about additional layers of defense beyond the password. LastPass does not send or store the master password. If LastPass can't access your data, hackers can't either. And encryption happens exclusively at the device level before syncing to LastPass for safe storage, so only users can decrypt their data. Also, they use 256-bit AES encryption. That is the same encryption type utilized by banks and the military, so it is robust. LastPass protects and provides a seamless workflow for your employees. Account access and passwords can be shared securely between employees, whether they're in the office or working remotely from home or anywhere else. Employees will get secure access to their work applications with SSO and password management, and there's even an offline mode for both password management and multi-factor authentication, so employees can always access what they need. LastPass can help make remote work simple and secure. So visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help your business stay productive and secure no matter what. That is LastPass.com/twit. Amanda, you know, with the Young Ham of the Year deadline coming up on Sunday at midnight Eastern time, when there have been a couple of recent Young Ham of the Year recipients from your part of the world there in Colorado. So if anybody over there in Colorado knows of a deserving young radio amateur under the age of 18, be sure you go to newsline.org and check under the awards tab and get that nomination form in, because we're literally down to days, if not hours now, to get the 2020 Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Young Ham of the Year Award nominations in. And we want to make sure that we recognize a deserving young amateur. A lot of good hams over there in Colorado, and here's one right now, Amanda.
That's right. You're not speaking to the best one, by the way, but there are some brilliant minds here in Colorado. I don't know if it's the high altitude or what, but there's also been some good ones coming from New Mexico. You know, Brian Milishovsky, yep. Skyler, oh, yeah. We got Anna. Yep. Boy, yep. I'll tell you what, we do have some pretty smart folks here in the Rocky Mountain Division. Hey, I just want to show off our little hotspot. I don't know if you can reach yours, Don, but there's ours, oh, George. Sweet. What do you think? Yeah. Jeff was just talking on P25. I think that is his mode of choice. George isn't on anymore, is he? He's hung up. That's right. Yep. Don, what mode do you usually use? You use Fusion? Is that correct?
I do. I use Fusion and D-Star mostly. I have the original OpenSpot, the one that does not have Wi-Fi. You got to jack it into the Ethernet, and it's right out there. I can't reach it, but that was a $50 Hamfest purchase, so that was money well spent. Yeah, and I usually get into D-Star or not get in on Fusion to talk to you there in Colorado. I've got, in fact, it's right here. I have a DMR radio, but so far I have about the as far as I've gotten with working DMR is I've learned how to spell DMR. And I've also learned how to spell TYT because it's right there on the front of the radio. That's about the extent of DMR for me. There is a new DMR repeater in New Orleans, by the way, on 444. Well, I'm not even going to say, but it's either, I think it's 444.8 or 444.6. Director of engineering for my iHeart radio cluster in New Orleans just put a DMR repeater up. So he's in the process of getting that up. So there will be another DMR repeater in New Orleans, and it'll be one that I can play with when I go to work once I get this programmed. But yeah, now D-Star and Fusion are the two. And I mainly use Fusion to talk to you and also to talk to Bob Brodowski over there in California, the YouTube guy. So that's kind of what I use mine for. Yeah.
And I think everyone has their preference of what audio they like best. And there is a huge difference, you guys, when you get on there. I would have to say my mind goes from either P25 or D-Star being number one, and then NXDN, DMR, and then Fusion maybe is the quality level. So D-Star and P25 are pretty level in how they sound, but the rest can start to sound kind of cruddy, and there's a lot of things you have to play with. So you have to be patient. If you get a bad audio report, don't think it's just something you did. Just know that it takes some adjusting and some tweaking, right, and all of that good stuff. So exactly. Don't give up. I saw some people on chat like, it's too complicated. It is. It is complicated. But once you get it down right, it's awesome. It actually is really freaking awesome. And then, hey, all these times you've never had any D-Star repeaters around here, now you can check into the Ham Nation after show, not on 14 Charlie's. So there
That's
you go.
Right.
Then you won't have any excuses. And there's quite a few special events anymore that are just on the digital modes. So don't give up. Keep going at it, especially if you're getting some of these great deals at the HamFest like Don did, $50. That's awesome. All right. Well, we have a special guest here this evening. Mike, thanks for joining us. Congrats on your award. We really appreciate you being
different
here.
Different Mike.
Oh, different Mike. No one ever tells me anything, Victor. No, actually, I think he did tell me that. Mike, other Mike, thanks for joining us this evening. Now, just tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get into ham radio, and how did this become your passion?
Well, I actually was a shortwave listener in my teen years and didn't have anyone to mentor me. There were no Elmers in my neighborhood. And so I was walking through a Radio Shack, and I was in my early 30s and saw the W5YI course. And I said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to force myself to do it. I had the code tapes with it. And my 12-year-old son at the time wanted to listen to the code tapes as well. And I figured he would be done with it in, you know, a matter of minutes or at most days. And it turns out we passed our test on the same day. He was 12. I was, I think, 31 or 32. And we were sort of DXers from the start. I moved a lot in my career and ended up buying a house that had a four-element beam. And that got me set off in DXing. And then kind of the expeditioning desire set in a few years after that, going to HamFest, watching these guys, the presentations, and just kind of a sense of adventure. And so my son and I actually began to do expeditions together. And we continued that until he went off to college. He's now an MD. His call is Alpha Bravo 5 Echo Bravo. He's still very active. And now we're back in the expeditioning business, try to do one or two big trips a year. This year, obviously, along with everyone else, we're a little bit limited. And then, you know, I've gravitated to CW and I'm number one on a roll. I've worked, almost 1100 IOTA islands. So I'm just always looking for that next adventure.
Well, great. Thank you so much for sharing that. We appreciate it. And that's really all I have this evening. You'll have to be on again after your next expedition and tell us how it goes. I'm sure Valerie would love to have you on, wouldn't you, Val?
I would, definitely. I love having the expeditioners on because they're so, it's such an adventure. And what other hobby lets you go to these islands and do something like that? They're, you know, other than bird watching, I think it would be the other category, but so it's always so exciting to see these people go to these exotic places.
Absolutely. Now we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. I'm going to go over our nets tonight. We have 40 meters on 7192. I think Steve, last week he was at a wildfire. I don't believe he is this evening. So look for him around 14268. And we have DMR on 31012. And of course, 14 Charlie for D-Star. All right. The only other thing I wanted to talk about is Val and I have a special show coming up next week. So everyone needs to stay tuned.
Wow. Nice.
Yep.
We have some surprises up our sleeve.
Good. Good. That'll be fun. By the way, Steve, W7UDI is a wildfire. Guy's nuts.
He's his own hot spot.
Good one, Valerie.
He and I do our best to get in trouble when we go to hunts or go to Dayton together. So, yeah, he's a good guy. All right, y'all. Thanks for being on. Thanks to our guest tonight, and congratulations to Mike Zed for the IOTA award. That's amazing. I didn't even know that there was an IOTA award. There's an award for everything, so why shouldn't there be? And speaking of awards, don't forget. Sunday night at midnight Eastern is the deadline for the 2020 Newsline Young Ham of the Year nominations. You got to get them in. before midnight. It's all via email. Just go to the awards tab right there. Victor, if you can click on the awards tab, and you'll find exactly where the nomination form is. Right there. Yep. And there's the nominating form. You download it right there. You fill it in. It's email only. So you have right up until 11:59:59, if you can, Eastern time on the end of the last day of May, Sunday the 31st, you click that send button. As long as it gets to us by midnight, you're golden. Don't have to worry about the mail anymore, which is handy. So we hope to see you at the Huntsville, Alabama Ham Fest. We have been at Huntsville since 1993, I believe. So we've got a long history with Huntsville, and sure hope that they keep that going this year. Certainly hope. With all the conventions and ham fests and events that have been canceled or postponed, we certainly hope that that's late enough in the year this year that Huntsville and some of the other late year last quarter ham fests and events can go on. Because, man, this is... I started calling this the lost year. 2020 is the lost year, and every day is Blur's day. haven't been to work in 3 months, but I've been working every day, like George. Thank God that I'm considered essential with the company. Somebody's got to load commercials and make commercials, and thankfully with my studio right here and this great Heil microphone, I'm able to work from home. So very thankful for that, and thankful for health, and hopefully you guys are staying healthy as well. And stay healthy, and we'll all meet right back here again next week, right here on Wednesday night here on Ham Nation. So for the usual suspects, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. Thanks a lot for being here. We appreciate you, and we'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.